5:05 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Iran says implementation day is drawing near. Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said Wednesday his government expects the International Atomic Energy Agency will issue a final report, perhaps as early as Friday, confirming it has met its obligations under the International Nuclear Agreement. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry spoke of Iran's implementation in remarks Wednesday near Washington.
I can assure you, we will continue to monitor implementation of this agreement closely because, yes, existential challenges are at stake here. And we will ensure that the specter of a nuclear-armed Iran is removed as a threat to the Middle East security and global peace. And it is not insignificant that Iran has agreed to submit to this, agreed to undertake these steps, agreed that it will not build this weapon.
Mr. Kerry said the so-called implementation day, when Iran has fulfilled all its obligations, is going to take place soon. That will provide Tehran with sanctions relief. Meanwhile, Mr. Kerry said Iran's release of 10 U.S. Navy personnel Wednesday after their two craft drifted into Iranian waters was a success for diplomacy. The freed crew members are now at a U.S. facility in Qatar. The Ethiopian government Wednesday announced it is scrapping controversial plans to expand the capital Addis Ababa into surrounding rural areas, a decision made public in November that sparked violent anti-government protests. Human Rights Watch says its own assessment concluded that at least 140 people had been killed in a crackdown on protests over the pending displacement of farmers in the land of the Oromo people, Ethiopia's largest ethnic minority. The government has issued no official figures on casualties. This is VOA News. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter Wednesday said the U.S. Special Operations Forces have arrived in Iraq and are set to help Baghdad's forces target Islamic State strongholds. He said about 200 commandos have already established contact with Iraqis and expect to look for, quote, new targets, new strikes, and new opportunities.
And the Specialized Expeditionary Targeting Force, I announced in December, is now in place and is preparing to work with the Iraqis to begin going after ISIL's fighters and commanders, killing or capturing them wherever we find them, along with other key targets.
The U.S. is seeking to help Iraqi and Kurdish Peshmerga forces retake Mosul in northern Iraq and assist Syrian rebels oust IS fighters in northern Syria. President Obama spoke by phone Wednesday with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin about ongoing efforts to bring the Syrian civil war to an end, as well as abiding by terms of a ceasefire in Ukraine. They both voiced support for UN talks to resolve the civil war in Syria, in which President Bashar al-Assad's future remains a key sticking point. U.S. lawmakers were told Wednesday the road to successfully blunt North Korea's military adventurism and potentially forcing the rogue nation to give up its nuclear weapons program runs through Beijing. Bonnie Glazer of the Centers for Strategic and International Studies was among those appearing before the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
The U.S. should not expect Beijing to completely abandon its ally and forge a common strategy with Washington to squeeze North Korea until it gives up its nuclear weapons or collapses. But it may be possible to persuade China to strictly comply with its existing international commitments, to further tighten sanctions on North Korea, and to reduce its support or make continued support contingent on specific actions by Pyongyang to return to its denuclearization pledges.
Heritage Foundation analyst Bruce Klinger said it's essential to get China to comply with existing sanctions against Pyongyang. The U.S. House of Representatives voted nearly unanimously Tuesday to pass legislation to broaden sanctions on North Korea. The U.S. has expressed concerns about an ongoing crackdown against Chinese human rights defenders following reports Wednesday. Several prominent rights lawyers were arrested on charges of state subversion. Some of them were charged after being held for 6 months. Mark Toner is a U.S. spokesman.
The United States urges China to drop these charges and immediately release these lawyers and others like them detained for seeking to protect the rights of Chinese citizens.
The lawyers were among more than 130 lawyers detained last July after being accused of organizing protests outside courtrooms in an effort to pressure local authorities. Officials in eastern Afghanistan said a gun and bomb attack Wednesday near the Pakistani consulate in Jalalabad killed 7 security personnel and wounded 10, including 3 civilians. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia will today mark yet another milestone in the fight against Ebola virus.
Today, January 14, 2016, Liberia will once again have gone 42 days without any evidence of human-to-human transmission of Ebola virus disease.
Talbot Nyenswa is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Health for Public Health and head of the country's Ebola response. Human rights groups hope to outlaw the death penalty in Zimbabwe, and two losing candidates question the results in the Central African Republic elections.
Ces élections constituent véritablement le premier pas de sortie de crise.
We believe that elections are a first step out of the country's crisis. However, what we have seen during the voting and the counting of votes makes us question the credibility of the vote, says Kolimba.
That's VOA's Katerina Hoyer in Bamako, Mali. South Sudan president marches with supporters to register the ruling SPLM party. And blind students learn through technology in Kenya. Those stories plus Mark Omar Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today, Thursday, Liberia is once again expected to be declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. It will be the third time that the country will be declared free of the virus. More than 11,000 people have died from the disease in Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Wednesday the end of Ebola transmission in West Africa is testament of what can be achieved when the international community works alongside national governments in caring for their people. He called on the world to make good on its pledges to care for the more than 10,000 Ebola survivors. Talbot Nyenswa is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Health and Public Health and head of the country's Ebola response. He joins us now from Monrovia, Liberia. Good morning to you, Mr. Nyenswa.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us again. Today, Thursday, a very important day for Liberia. What is it that the country is expecting?
Today, January 14, 2016, Liberia will once again have gone 42 days without any evidence of human-to-human transmission of Ebola virus disease, and thereby has met the criteria set by WHO for human transmission of this devastating illness called Ebola. So meaning we are again Ebola-free.
Mr. Nyenswa, looking forward, is there a concern that this Ebola might come back again soon, or do you think the country, Liberia, is out of the woods?
There is global concern of resurgence or flare-up of the Ebola virus disease. We've seen this two times in Liberia. The resiliency is the most important part of containing an outbreak. We've shown that in Liberia that the healthcare system has the capacity now, human resource capacity, infection prevention and control capacity. Healthcare workers are vigilant. Response workers are vigilant. So if there's any flare-up of the Ebola virus disease, we can jump on it quickly, do the test within 24 hours, isolate the cases, and reduce secondary infection.
You mentioned the resiliency of the Liberian people. What message do you have for them in terms of complacency that might result to the Ebola coming back again?
In the global response to the Ebola virus disease, we have strategic and plan 3 strategy, meaning we are still keeping the vigilant and surveillance system going. We still continue to test their body through our swapping program. We are still checking for virus that may be persistent in people that we are following up. Semen testing program is ongoing. So Liberian people should cooperate with the health team, always keep the preventive measures going.
What would you say about the help that the international community gave to Liberia?
The help is tremendous. President Sirleaf said these words, and I quote, "They believe that we are one shared humanity, part of an interconnected world, was brought into sharp relief by the recent Ebola epidemic that has ravaged my home country, Liberia, as well as our neighboring countries across West Africa," unquote. These were the president's words. So we are interconnected. the world saw that one border affected by a disease has international implications.
Mr. Nyeswa, we thank you very much again, and congratulations to you and the Liberian people for another achievement with this Ebola virus.
Thank you. Our vigilance is on, and we'll continue to do our job to save lives in the sub-region and the world over.
Talbot Nyeswa is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Health for Public Health and head of the country's Ebola response. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The losing candidates in the Central African Republic's elections have asked for a recount of the vote while voicing concerns over widespread irregularities. International analysts and many Central Africans agreed the elections were not perfect. Now the credibility of the poll is at stake as authorities scramble to finalize first-round results and organize a second round. Katarina Hoyer reports.
Late last year, the Central African Republic held elections to replace the transitional government currently in power. The elections were seen as a welcome indicator of stability and a first step towards putting an end to the country's three-year-long conflict. The rushed vote, however, was marred by logistical difficulties and irregularities. Early this month, a majority of the 30 presidential candidates asked authorities to stop the vote counting. On Tuesday, two losing candidates, Desiré Kolimba and Martin Ségolé, demanded a manual recount of the vote, saying that widespread irregularities undermined the credibility of the results.
Dans ces élections-là, parce que nous pensons que ces élections constituent véritablement le premier pas de sortie de crise.
We believe that elections are a first step out of the country's crisis. However, what we have seen during the voting and the counting of votes makes us question the credibility of the vote, says Kolimba. On the day of the elections, many polling stations opened later or lacked material such as ballot papers or updated voters' lists. In some areas, people were not able to vote. 1.8 million people had registered for the country's first presidential and legislative elections since the Seleka rebels ousted ex-president François Bozize and took power in 2013. The elections are seen as a first step to bring the country out of its conflict, says the UN head of mission Parfait Anyanga Onanga. However, an election that's not seen as fair and credible, and even marred by fraud, might affect the reconciliation process and continued stability.
Et que des élections puissent se tenir de manière à avoir, dès que possible, des autorités légitimes.
To have a government elected by Central Africans is an important step towards ending the crisis. Our role is to assist them in this process. Now, it is a human effort. Naturally, it's not perfect. Our goal is to ease the process to make the elections as credible as possible, Onanga says. It is now up to the country's constitutional court to review the vote and announce the final results. The court may ask to redo the parliamentarian elections in some constituencies, but it is not likely to cancel the first round of the elections or make any revisions that significantly affect the provisional results. Two presidential candidates, Anicet Georges Dologele and Faustin Archange Todara, gained enough votes to go through to a second round. Whoever wins will face significant challenges restoring democracy and bringing the conflict to an end, including disarming the militia and rebel groups, restoring the country's security forces, and finding a solution for the close to 1 million Central Africans displaced by the conflict. Katerina Heye, VOA News, Bamako.
The organizer of the Ugandan presidential debate scheduled for tomorrow, Friday, says it will go ahead as planned, despite reports that President Yoweri Museveni might pull out. The debate is aimed at giving Ugandan voters the chance to hear directly from those who want to lead the country. Joshua Kitakule, Secretary General of the Interreligious Council of Uganda, tells reporter Peter Clotty that as for now, all 8 candidates have confirmed their attendance at the event in Kampala.
We are just reading it in the media, so we will regard that as speculation. Unless we get the official communication from the candidates is when we will be sure that they will not come. As of now, we are ready for the debate, and we know that all the 8 candidates confirmed their attendance, and we are waiting for them for come Friday.
Mr. Kitakule, has incumbent President Yoweri Museveni given assurances of his participation on Friday, because his participation is key, and that is the expectations of many prospective Ugandan voters. If he does not come in, a lot of people will be disappointed because they want to hear from the commander-in-chief who seeks re-election. So what is the assurance that he is going to be there?
He had a few challenges about schedule, but the last time we heard about it, he was saying that he's the handler We're working on the schedule, and if that allows him, he will be ready to come for the debate. But by and large, his assistants have been attending our meetings, and they have confirmed his attendance.
The other issue is about security in the country. There were reports by the Prime Minister, Dr. Ruakana Rugunda, that there are allegations of some opposition groups trying to destabilize the country if they don't win the election, and that prompted the President, as the Commander-in-Chief, to call on the military to be deployed across the country. Some people are saying this could actually spark destabilization and create further tension ahead of the election. What is your organization doing or saying about this development?
Well, in most of the elections we've had, you know, elections cause tension. And normally the army is deployed to ensure that they keep order, that they support the police to keep order, that they are patrolling. And so it's been the culture here. So I don't think that there's anything to alarm. I don't think that there's something that we've not witnessed before. So it's not something that we are not aware of.
How about concerns of the opposition parties, especially Amama Mbabazi, as well as Dr. Chisa Besigye, who have said that the state security agencies, including the police, are being used to intimidate and harass their supporters, and their campaigns are being frustrated by the state machinery?
Those are isolated incidences, and we give our guidance. We always speak to the police, to be professional, to stick to the rules of the game. By and large, the country is peaceful, and we hope that we'll come out of these elections peaceful.
Joshua Kitakule is Secretary General of the Interreligious Council of Uganda. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 14th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court began its year on Wednesday with a request from 15 death row prisoners for their sentences to be commuted. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, human rights lawyers are hoping the death penalty will be outlawed in Zimbabwe this year.
The lawyer for the 15 said they have been waiting for their execution for periods ranging between 4 and 20 years. All have been convicted of murder or treason, which carry capital sentences in Zimbabwe. Their lawyer, former Zimbabwe Finance Minister Tendai Biti, says after this case is over, he wants the death penalty completely outlawed.
When someone has been sentenced to death, he can't be subjected to death row and wait for so many years on death row. And we're saying that is unconstitutional. We would like to challenge the death penalty, and I believe we will do so this year once Parliament has passed the amendments to the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act. We don't believe in the death penalty. And you can also see that some of the judges also don't believe in it, including the Minister of Justice, now a vice president, who feel very strongly against the death penalty. They just didn't have the courage of simply saying, let's outlaw it.
The vice president Biti refers to is Emmerson Mnangagwa, who opposes death penalty. In 2013, Mnangagwa said he would rather resign than sign certificates for executions.
We have 89 people on the death row. Two of them are women. And they are lucky and sign papers for their execution. So at the end of the day, I commit them to life imprisonment.
Since those comments, the number of prisoners awaiting execution has risen to more than 100. Biti says a ban on the death penalty must come from the courts instead of depending on the benevolence of one politician. On Wednesday, he argued that Zimbabwe's constitution protects everyone, including convicted prisoners, against torture or cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment. He said the long periods his clients have waited in prison, never knowing when they might be hanged, amount to such punishment. Death row prisoners in Zimbabwe are not told in advance of the date and the time of their execution. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Hundreds of supporters of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, the SPLM party, yesterday joined President Salva Kiir in a procession from the John Garang Mausoleum to the political party's council offices to register the SPLM before tomorrow, Friday's deadline for registering all political parties. Gift Friday of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
SPLM number one.
President Kiir, who normally rides in a convoy of expensive cars, mingled on the street with party supporters amid tight security. He praised SPLM supporters for walking with him for 3 kilometers under the scorching Juba sun.
I'm standing here only to thank you very much for the support you have shown us. And I want to tell you that there is no easy struggle. See, the distance you covered up to the office and came back is a struggle itself. Thank you all for that.
Under the South Sudan Political Parties Act of 2012, all political parties willing to participate in any elections in the country must register by January 15th. Mr. Kiir appealed to his party supporters to campaign for him in the 2018 general elections in the country.
When it comes to the voting, these numbers you brought today increase more. Come cast them in my box.
Several SPLM party lawmakers were on hand to witness the registration process. Stephen Ajango, a member of parliament from Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State, says he is optimistic the party will be popular once again. He says the August peace deal agreement is an achievement of the ruling party.
The SPLM is taking lead for the reconciliation and forgiveness. The SPLM is taking lead for the peace and unity. No more war again. Enough is enough. Let us stop war.
SPLM supporter Akech Santo Deng says he is happy the ruling party is now a legitimate institution in South Sudan.
So today I'm very happy because SPLM is the first party to register. Also, I appreciate our president. He worked with us from the museum up to the political party's office. So this is very encouraging, and we encourage all the parties to do the same.
Santino called on youths across the country to reconcile and stop preaching hate speech. The deputy SPLM secretary for the newly created Imatong State, Felix Okanyi, says the party is ready to compete with other political parties in the 2018 general elections.
If you don't register with the political party council, you won't participate in any general elections or any referendum. So we are so happy because at last we have achieved the goal which we have struggled to achieve.
This marks the first time political parties are registering in South Sudan. The SPLM was registered in the then Sudan in 2009 before the 2010 general elections. The South Sudan Political Parties Council has yet to release the number of political parties which have registered to participate in the 2018 elections. For VOA, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Until recently, blind and visually impaired students in Kenya were still using Braille books for their studies. But Kenyan schools for the blind are now beginning to adopt technology that provides materials in audible form and, in the process, expands their opportunities. Lenny Ruvaga reports from the town of Tika.
17-year-old Lucas Monzia intently searches the internet for information. Today's class is on biology. Monzia is visually impaired and for the last 2 years has been attending computer classes at the Thika School for the Blind. Monzia is in eighth grade, having started school at a later age because of his vision. He says the technology has opened new frontiers that were once inaccessible.
Braille books are quite expensive and you have to use quite a sum to purchase one. But now, since we have computers, we get the books at virtually no cost. So we download the various books to read, and when we are done, we just close the program.
The school embraced assistive technology 6 years ago, enabling blind and visually impaired students to access information from computers and iPads. Zachary Mwasia, one of the school's teachers, was born blind. He has been teaching the students how to use the technology for about 2 years now. He says the technology presents opportunities that can level the playing field for his students.
Assistive technology equip learners with very many skills that really make them independent in life. They can read materials like books, magazines, or newspapers by themselves.
And apart from that, it also assists them to
acquire the employable skills.
The assistive technology costs $1,000 for a school to install, but an NGO called Enable has provided it to the schools at no cost. Peter Okeo, the program manager at Enable, says blind students using the technology may still face challenges when they move to higher education.
When learners move from primary to high school and then to universities, they go to university and then they realize that there is no that technology. So the fact that they learn technology in primary and high school, when they move to higher to university, they go back to Braille, which is now another challenge to them.
So far, 4 out of Kenya's 11 schools for the blind have adopted the technology. Enable says it will provide the funding for the remaining schools to come on board. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Thika, Kenya.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with boxing. Edward Kakembo will be crowned Uganda Sports Press Association USPA Sports Personality of the Month of December 2015 in Kampala, Uganda, today, Thursday. USPA voted Kakembo the country's most outstanding sports personality last month when he beat Nigerian Waidi Usman in a 12-round unanimous decision to clinch the Africa Boxing Union featherweight title in Lagos, Nigeria, on the 26th of December. Turning to football, Libyan hosts Al Ittihad Tripoli edged Ghana's Kumasi Asante Kotoko 2-1 in the first of two friendly matches in Tripoli on Wednesday. In Switzerland, Jerome Valks is no longer FIFA Secretary General. The FIFA Emergency Committee disclosed in Zurich on Wednesday. The FIFA Emergency Committee has sacked Valks, and in his place, Markus Kattner is acting Secretary General. FIFA suspended Valks for 90 days last September following allegations against him of inappropriate conduct with respect to World Cup ticket sales. The FIFA Ethics Committee extended Valk's suspension for a further 45 days when the initial suspension expired on the 5th of January. Meanwhile, Frenchman Pierre Lechantre takes over as the Congolese national team coach, the Republic of Congo Football Federation revealed in Brazzaville on Wednesday. His first order of business is to build a team for their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Zambia in March. The Congolese are also among the 20 African teams vying for the 5 places up for grabs to the 2018 FIFA World Cup in Russia. In handball, Gabon upstaged their hosts Tunisia 32-29 in an international friendly played in Hammamet, some 80 kilometers southeast of the Tunisian capital Tunis. Both teams are preparing for the Africa Men's Handball Championships starting in Cairo, Egypt next week. Finally, a record 699 athletes from 154 countries have submitted preliminary entries for the World Indoor Athletics Championships, the IAAF revealed in Monaco. The biannual event takes place in Portland, Oregon State, in the United States of America from the 17th to 20th of March. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. That's it for this Thursday, January 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer, John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, peace talks between the Burundian government and the opposition groups have been postponed with no word on when they may resume. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss the crisis in Burundi. That's next time on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk. School life. How did it shape your life and affect your personality? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing school life. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.